I'm Anthony Pastore. Welcome to UBS On Air. Social Security. It's typically thought of as a complicated and oftentimes confusing topic. At what age can you begin to claim your benefits? What happens if you're married, single, divorced, widowed, or in a same-sex marriage? So many different scenarios can affect how and when you claim. Well, look no more. Today, we are breaking it all down and providing you with a complete guide to Social Security. My guest, Carlo Cordasco from the Nationwide Retirement Institute. There, Carlo speaks to thousands of financial advisors, their clients, and retirement plan participants on the topic of retirement. One of these topics is filing for Social Security benefits and what to be aware of as you start to incorporate this into your retirement income strategy. Carlo, it's great to have you here in the studio with me. Thanks so much for coming by today.
Thanks, Anthony. It's a pleasure to be a guest on your show. Before we begin, I'd like to let you know that the information I'm sharing today is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be tax, legal, accounting, or other professional type of advice. The information is based on current laws, which are subject to change, of course, and has not been endorsed by any government agency. We always ask everyone, please consult with a financial or tax advisor to discuss their personal situation.
Great. We ask for the same thing. We always say to our listeners, make sure to speak to your financial advisor. They are the best person to help you with your financial plans and any thoughts you might have on your investments. So thanks for doing that for us, Carlo. All right. So let's just level set here, Carlo, and maybe you could start by telling us who your group is, the Nationwide Retirement Institute, and of course, what it is that you all do.
Sure thing. Our group, the Nationwide Retirement Institute, is part of Nationwide Financial. A lot of times when people hear Nationwide, they think of property and casualty business, but we have a very strong financial services business as well. It involves distribution of things like annuities, mutual funds, life insurance, and retirement plans. Our group, Nationwide Retirement Institute, is a thought leadership arm of our business, and we speak very frequently on topics that our research shows people, advisors, clients want to be better informed about, things like Social Security, filing strategies, et cetera. Ultimately, we want to be the very best at helping American workers plan for and live in retirement.
Terrific. And Carlo, obviously the reason why we asked you to come in today is because Social Security really is a very hot topic. We've heard from many of our financial advisors here at UBS, and they've heard from their clients that there are lots and lots of questions swirling around this topic. So what do you think people should know most about Social Security?
You know, as a baby boomer and watching my parents struggle with trying to understand this and having conversations around our own kitchen table, there are a lot of factors to really have to dig through. The need for income due to a loss of employment or illness, whether it's yours or family members, there are so many people who perceive that Social Security is not even going to be there for them when they finally do retire. So they want to take it now, or in other words, our system will run out of money.
Right.
Additionally, I think some people don't understand how much the reduction is and that impact that can last over a lifetime.
What's an example of that?
Well, for example, if you have someone who wants to file at age 62 when they're first normally eligible versus waiting the full retirement age or until age 70, they could see a reduction as much as 25% from their full retirement age, or leave behind as much as even another 67% if they wait until age 70.
What kind of a reduction are you talking about, Carlo, what, as far as numbers are concerned?
Well, if I, for example, are looking to file a full retirement age, and let's just say round numbers, I'm expecting a $1,000 benefit.
Right.
But I decide either A, I made an uninformed decision, or B, I want to take it now because maybe Social Security won't be there in the future. I will see a 25% reduction from filing at age 66 versus filing at age 62. So my $1,000 is now only $750 per month for every year as long as I live, plus some cost of living increases. But that's very meaningful. So what we ask people to do is to slow down. Don't do just what people have done because they've done it.
Right.
Talk to your advisor and really understand Social Security as part of a comprehensive financial plan.
Right. This is good. This is exactly why there are so many questions, because something like that, I think that's a really significant number that a lot of people maybe aren't aware of. So why do you think people make this decision? Is it just because they're not knowledgeable about what Social Security is and how the benefits work?
I think for the most part, somebody working with a financial advisor is probably making a better decision.
Right, right.
But generally speaking, a lot of people, and advisors still surprised today, a lot of people still make this decision on their own because they don't think of it as part of their overall financial plan. And so the idea here is to take Social Security as what we once knew in the past as something we were entitled to because we paid into it. But now that we're living longer, slowing down and asking our advisors, before I make this decision, what options do I have?
Right. As far as options, a lot of people ask the question about quote unquote full retirement age, what that actually means. Can you talk about that and define what that means for our listeners?
Yeah, by definition, it's the age that we'll receive our full benefit monthly if we file at our full retirement age. They call it our primary insurance amount.
Uh-huh.
And that really depends on when someone is born. For everybody born after 1954, the full retirement age is somewhere between 66 and 67. I'm born in 1960. I'm the first year of 67-year-old full retirement age. So basically, you can find that on your Social Security statement. The full retirement age is shown on the front page. And if you wait until that age to claim, there'll be no reduction in your benefits.
Right. Is the full retirement age still the same for someone who's born in the 70s, 80s, or afterwards?
For right now, 67 is the maximum full retirement age from 1960 forward. However, there are some conversations going on in the halls of Congress about pushing full retirement age out. We'll wait to see if that's one of the options for securing Social Security.
Right. And certainly we know that for people are living longer, and maybe that's part of the conversation that's happening, is that the average age of, you know, of living has increased significantly over the last two, three, four decades.
People are living longer, and so their income needs to live longer.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I feel like I'm just going to be working until I'm in my 90s, as long as I can, God willing, get up out of bed every morning. It's hard enough as it is already. You mentioned the primary insurance amount, Carlo. What is that?
Yeah, it's the amount that you receive if you do wait until full retirement age. Basically, it's the standard. It's the basis for which calculations are made by filing early or waiting to file later. So ultimately, that is the number that you're entitled to at your full retirement age. It's your full benefit amount. So basically, that's also shown on everyone's Social Security statement. It's calculated by taking your largest 35 years of earnings, and they apply a secret sauce or a formula to it,
right,
to help bring it into today's dollars. And so they bring it in, they index it to today's dollars. So the longer somebody works and the longer they pay into Social Security, the more data the administration has, the more years they have to factor in. So for example, if someone doesn't have 35 years, let's say they have only 30 years, then there'll be five lines of zeros, which means their primary insurance amount could be lower than if they would have worked 35 years.
Right. That makes sense. Right. The longer you work, the more the benefits.
And there's another question that comes up a lot too, that is, if people work beyond 35 years, how does that impact things?
Huh.
Well, I tell people it's not linear. It is really the highest 35 years. And if you're still working and collecting and paying into Social Security, you could, for all intents and purposes, have a higher year and see your benefit increased again the following year.
So if I'm 67 years old, or say I go to full retirement age, I go past it, but I'm still working until I'm in my 80s,
right,
I can collect and work at the same time?
That's correct.
Huh. That's something correct. That I wasn't aware of.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. People are surprised by that. And they ask, if I am still working and collecting, do I still have to pay Social Security taxes?
Right.
And I say, yes, but think about it again. If you have a year where you've been able to earn more on an indexed basis. So Carlo graduates from school and gets his first job. And 30 something years ago, I wasn't making anything close to what I'm making today.
Right.
But that number indexed to what it would be today is what goes into my calculation.
Got it. That makes sense.
So that helps.
Right. So let's go back to the idea of waiting past full retirement age, Carlo. Is there a max? Does it actually reach a level where you cannot accumulate any more as far as what you'd be collecting as your monthly benefit?
Yeah, good question. That comes up a lot too when we're with advisors and listen to questions from their clients. In fact, every year or even part of that year that you wait after your full retirement age, there's an additional credit added. It's 8% per year, or 1/12 of 8% for each month that you wait from full retirement age out to age 70. Now, the benefit delayed credit is what it's referred to, does end accruing at age 70.
Okay.
It doesn't mean you can't wait to file, and maybe there are tax reasons why you might wait to file, but there's no reason to wait to grow your benefit any longer beyond age 70.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. And I know that must be a common question for you, I'm sure. So if you want to claim your benefits, Carlo, you stand then to receive a bigger check, right? That just sort of makes sense from what we were talking about here. So let's move on to some claiming rules and some decisions that people have to face when deciding whether or not they're going to start claiming.
There are a lot of decisions. There are thousands of rules and hundreds of filing options. And so what we try to do is help people slow down, break down their options, and figure out which handful of options make the most sense for them. So whether they're single, married, divorced, or widowed, there are all those rules for claiming and filing benefits. It's important to understand that you can make a decision that's best for you in retirement. And that's where we're here to help. It's important to have a trusted advisor that can help interpret these rules and help their clients make those informed decisions.
Right, exactly. I second that notion as well. So let's talk a little bit about spouses and how they can claim benefits. Wasn't there actually a change to how spouses could claim Social Security, Carla?
There was recently. There were some benefits. There are a lot, well, we'll call it a little more richer than what they might be today.
Right.
But when the Social Security Administration and Congress were working on showing up the Disability Trust Fund, mm-hmm. they had to find a way to pay for some of that. So they did eliminate some of those options. There is one that still allows for a grandfathering in if someone was born by January 1st of 1954. It's called filing restricted. We can save that for another conversation because it requires a lot more conversation.
Sounds complicated.
And detail about that. It's complicated. But if you think about spousal claiming rules, they could be tricky. There are a lot of rules. There are thousands of Social Security filing rules, hundreds of options. If I want to claim a Social Security benefit based on my wife's work record, and for the time being, I'm not going to consider claiming off of my own. I've got to follow those rules. And so understanding those rules are important.
So, Carla, why don't you give us a little bit of a rundown of what those rules actually are, as I would imagine that this particular topic is important for most people.
Yeah. And for those listening, if they want to just jot down a couple of things, I think this will be very helpful. Number one, you have to be married for at least 1 year. So if you want to write down the number one and 1 year next, that's fine. Number two, to be eligible, having been married for at least a year, you have to be at least 62. But remember, if you claim any benefit before your full retirement age, just as if you were filing for your own, a spousal benefit would be reduced as well.
Okay.
So write down number 62.
Something important to think about.
Number three, your spouse has to have claimed his or her own benefit as well. So there is a prerequisite, so to speak, in terms of how long you have to be married. There's a prerequisite in terms of how old you have to be, but you are not eligible to collect off of your spouse's benefit until they file. Otherwise, you'd be able to claim your own up to that point. So basically, if my spouse has filed, if we're married for at least a year and I'm at least 62, I'm eligible for a spousal change.
Boy, they really make this complicated, don't they? So let me see if I can interpret what you just said, Carlo. So if your spouse wants to claim, you will then have to wait to claim a spousal benefit.
That's correct.
But their check, once they claim, will be bigger because they waited?
Correct. If in fact, and basically the formula, again, pretty complicated, but if in fact I wait to file off of my spouse and my benefit is less than half of her benefit, mm-hmm. I may be entitled up to half of her benefit, depending on when I file.
Got it. What about the 8% increase in credits? How does that happen and fall into this particular set of rules?
Now, good question. And this one's too long to write down, but let me see if I can explain it and simplify it. It gets a little tricky here, but the maximum I would be entitled to in the case of myself and my spouse would be up to half of her primary insurance amount. Now, if you think back earlier on, we talked about primary insurance amount.
We did, yes.
Which is the amount that we would receive if we filed at our full retirement age. So it does not include any delayed credits. That's the important thing, because spousal benefits do not include the delayed credits. So it all really comes down to when I file for a spousal benefit, not when my spouse files.
Right. And again, full retirement age for anyone born after 1954 is 67 years old.
Well, 1960 is 67.
1960.
But from 1955 to 1959, it increases in two-month increments. So for example, somebody born in 1957, they've got to be careful. They have to wait till 66 and 6 months to reach their full retirement.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Boy, it's great that you're here. But another question that comes up a lot is related to same-sex couples. Because back in 2015, in June, that's when the Supreme Court said that same-sex couples have that constitutional right to marry, essentially taking out DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. So does that then mean that same-sex couples also get the same Social Security benefits?
It does. And if you read the decision and you read anything on SSA.gov, they still do refer to it as same-sex. But the bottom line is, if you're legally married today in the United States, you have the ability to file for Social Security benefits as anyone else does.
Perfect. And I know we're going to get into this conversation about divorced couples and widows and widowers. I would assume then that means that as long as you are legally married, it's same sex or otherwise, same benefits.
Legally married and then legally divorced? Sure, absolutely.
Perfect.
The options to file for all legally married couples in the United States extend across the board.
Great. All right. So let's continue then with the claiming discussion with single people. So unmarried, you're single. How does it work for you?
Yeah, and it's important to remember that some people may have been single all along. Some people may be single situationally by choice or by circumstances.
That's right.
It's important to understand that these filing options are really designed for very specific individuals at specific times. Basically, single people's choices are a little easier since there may be no other family members to have to consider. Their Social Security benefits can't be left to a family member like other assets. So unless I'm a divorcee or a widow, the claiming decision is determined by when I will need the income and if it makes sense to wait to claim the benefit for some other reason.
Does this include widowed and divorced people? Is that considered a single person?
Because there are other filing options, even though they would be considered single, they have access to other filing options. So why don't we talk about those a little bit?
All right, so let's go into divorced people, because I know that this is a topic that comes up quite a bit, since I think it's 49% of Americans are getting divorced. So that's a large amount of people who have this question. How does it work for them?
So according to the Pew Research, and to your point, the divorce rate of people 50 years old or older has doubled in since the 1990s. I've actually had a number of conversations with financial advisors who are trying to help their clients understand the impact of divorce with regards to the financial plan, and Social Security is an important conversation to factor into that. So when, and not necessarily if they should or shouldn't, but when they should or shouldn't might be important.
Right, since we said the divorce rate is pretty high these days.
It is high. So if you look at the eligibility rules, they say that if I want to claim a benefit on my ex-spouse, if I were divorced, I'd have to have been married for 10 years or more. Now, unlike the spousal filing, which is 1 year or more, this is important to understand. So it is 10 years. Also, I need to remain unmarried if I want to collect off of my ex-spouse. If I remarry, I would be eligible off of my spouse at that time. The other thing I need to understand is that I can also claim a spousal or survivor benefit as long as I'm still not married. So as long as I don't marry, it doesn't matter what my ex-spouse does. That's important.
So the ex-spouse can get married.
It'll change
as long as you're not married.
But it doesn't change my ability to file off of them, and it won't impact their new spouse either. Johnny Carson had four ex-wives of 10 years or longer, and everyone was able to claim off of Johnny. It didn't reduce his benefit, didn't reduce Joan or Joanne or Joan or Joanne or whatever their names were, right? So for anybody listening out there, you don't need to be concerned about the fact that if you're trying to claim off of your spouse or them off of you, it will not impact your benefit in particular.
Okay. So then again, about the spouse whose record is being claimed on, so the Johnny Carson in this situation, he really doesn't give up many of his benefits then.
They won't see an impact to their benefit of all. Now, there is one takeaway here. Just like with spousal, your ex-spouse has to file if you want to collect off of them. However, if your divorce is 2 years old or longer, and your ex-spouse either by choice isn't filing because of their financial circumstances, or for other reasons, maybe not as popular to you, once that divorce is 2 years old or longer, you can still collect a spousal divorcee benefit off of them independently of their filing.
Got it. So if Johnny hadn't have actually put his own claims in, but so-and-so was divorced from him for 2 years, she could claim the benefits even though he hadn't filed yet.
Correct.
So what about survivor benefits then? If you're a widow or a widower, how does that work for you?
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. That's another important one because we know that according to the Social Security Administration, over 95% of survivor benefits are paid to women. So women listening and spouses on the call as well. If your spouse is entitled to a benefit off of you, how you file may not impact them as a spouse, but it may impact them as a widow, or in fact, in some cases, a widower. So it's often referred to as the widow's benefit, but it could be paid to widowers as well, if you think about it that way. The rule says, again, lots of rules here. If we were married at least 9 months and my spouse has passed away, so if someone's spouse has passed or married for at least 9 months, they'd be eligible for a benefit based on their deceased spouse's benefits. And those benefit amounts, whether filed or not, would be tied to that deceased spouse's benefits.
Do you have an example?
Yeah, so let me use numbers.
Yeah.
So let's go back to myself and my spouse. Let's say my benefit was $2,500 and my spouse's was $1,000. While I was living, she was claiming a spousal benefit off of me and was getting about half of my benefit. When I predecease her, she'd be eligible for up to all of my benefit.
So all $2,500.
Including my delayed credit. So this is where it's different than spousal. Mm. So if I, as a spouse, for some reason have reason to believe I may predecease my spouse, and I know that the longer I wait to file, the larger benefit I can potentially leave behind for my spouse, that can factor into my overall decision about when I should file for Social Security.
Hmm. So do they essentially stop claiming their own and then get the full benefits of the person who passed away?
Yeah, there are some folks who've come to some of our seminars who thought they'd be getting both or they'd be stacked, and they're disappointed to find out, but not when they find out that they'd still get the larger of the two. Mm-hmm. The one thing I want to point out, too, is that we're talking a lot about a big difference in earnings between spouses. We know that in the past, we had more one-income earning households.
Right, more disparity between the two.
And today, we have an opportunity where one spouse or the other may be earning more than the other. And so that may not be as big a deal in the future, but right now, for those who are planning for Social Security benefits, it's a critical conversation to have with their advisor.
What about the delayed credits in that situation?
Yeah, delayed credits, for example, back to myself and my spouse. Let's say I waited till 70 and I was receiving an extra 24% over my full retirement age primary insurance amount. My benefit went from $2,000 to $2,480.
Right.
My spouse would be eligible for that 2480 as a percentage based on when she's filing and all those other factors that go into that.
Good. And if the widow remarries, what happens then?
There are rules for remarrying before age 60, and that's important to understand. And again, for the time we have today, I think the main thing is if a survivor remarries after age 60, they'd retain that widow's benefit. Mm. However, but not in addition to any other benefit they'd be entitled to from their new spouse. So they'd receive the greater of the two.
Okay. So they're not like they're getting double.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. That's
there will not, there will not be a double Social Security benefit. So no double strategies out there. Anybody listening to us?
So
right
don't
now.
Just get remarried to collect your new spouse's
that's
Social
correct.
Security benefits.
That's
got
correct.
It. Good
Do
life
it because
lesson.
You want to, right?
That's right. So I think then it's safe to say, Carlo, that there's obviously a lot of rules that we considered. And there were two or three that you even said we didn't have enough time to get to in this one podcast. But what other rules maybe that you could highlight for us are important for people to know considering what we're talking about in this discussion today?
Not everybody's going to be able to wait to take their benefits. Mm-hmm. And some may need to still work and take their benefits. So one of the questions that comes up a lot is the earnings test. People will say, I hear like I'm penalized if I'm working and collecting, I lose my benefit from Social Security or it's reduced and I never get it back. Mm. Let me address that for you because
sure.
that's not true. And there are a lot of reasons for that. The basic understanding of Social Security and working is that any benefit before full retirement age while you're working will be reduced depending on how much you're earning and how old you are. And there's a formula for that, and we have a resource that can help advisors determine that. So when you're working with your advisor, it's equally important to understand that once you do reach your full retirement age, that earning test stops. So if you're working pre-full retirement age, you'll see a reduction in your benefits. If you're working at full retirement age or later, your benefit will be paid out at full 100%. And you'll also start seeing a fractional return of what was withheld in those previous years. Mm. Most people don't know that. One of my theories on that is that in the past, most people who filed early and who were working didn't live long enough to really see a lot of that money coming back to them. And previous generations that might have been working and collecting might have thought of that as possibly an increase in their cost of living adjustments, things like that. Because I've had conversations with more mature, older folks who told me that they stopped working full time. They worked part-time because they didn't want to lose their benefits because they saw their folks not get that benefit back.
Right, right. That's great. Thanks, Carlo. So as we wrap up then, what would you say to our listeners as the takeaway from this conversation? Clearly, as we've said, they need to speak with an advisor or a tax professional, but what else should they really think about when they're walking away from this?
I think two important things. Number one, don't go it alone. Talk to the advisor.
Right.
Number two, don't just do what people do because they do. We talk about things like generational anchors. My mom was one of seven. She has two siblings still alive today. One of them will be 90, and he filed at 62, basically because my grandfather filed at age 62. Mm. He now knows that he made a decision he could have made a whole lot differently had he had more information, worked with an advisor to make that decision.
Right.
You can go online today and access and the online calculators that are out there that are free, that's a good start. But I'd say more importantly, go online, download your earning statement at socialsecurity.gov. Once you have that statement, make an appointment with your financial advisor who understands how these rules can be applied to your situation and help you decide on how this can fit into your overall retirement goals and objectives. Nationwide did a survey with Harris Poll in 2018. And we polled over 1,000 adults 50 years old or older, and we found that 88% don't know what factors determine the maximum Social Security benefit an individual can receive.
Right. I guess that is a staggeringly high number, but I guess it shouldn't surprise us because as we're going through this conversation, you educated me on a lot of things that I was unaware of. So I guess it's not surprising to hear that most people are in that same situation. Just seems like a lot of rules, and it could be complicated. A lot of numbers that get thrown out.
It's like a lot of numbers, but then they're taken apart like a puzzle, and you have to put the puzzle back together again. You don't want to make the decision without considering other sources of retirement income, part of the puzzle, tax consequences, part of the puzzle, longevity, all those types of things. All those pieces are important when trying to put them all together for a comprehensive plan and a comfortable retirement.
Right. Terrific. Carlo, thank you so much. This has been a really cool conversation, and I learned a lot, and I'm imagining that everyone listening to this will have had the same experiences, tons of information that you really were able to decipher for us that we had lots of questions on. So thanks for doing that. Carlo Cardasco, National Field Director with the Nationwide Retirement Institute. Great to see you.
Thank you, Anthony. Great to see you as well. It's been my pleasure.
My pleasure as well. This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.